Hello, my name is Ed Frawley, and of course, I own Learburg. This video deals with what a police canine handler should do if his police dog accidentally gets an overdose from fentanyl. This is a really good video. Last week, I went to Green Bay, Wisconsin with my friend, Kevin Sheldahl. If you don't know Kevin, he and I have been friends for 40 years now, but he was a retired police canine officer. He's an international police dog judge. He sells law enforcement dogs all over the country. But he came to Green Bay and held a 4-day recertification and training seminar. Part of this seminar was a presentation by Dr. Lisa Converse and her good friend that she works with, Lynn Hsu, who's been a vet tech for 20 years, 25 years, I think. Dr. Converse teaches trauma medicine. She's a retired vet, but she also teaches trauma medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a couple of other universities. They have started a business for helping police canine handlers and first responders that respond to problems with a police canine after it's had an overdose or been wounded in the line of duty. If you go to our website, and we'll put the web address here now, you can read a lot more information on what the background is for both of these ladies, because they were very, very good. I've been training dogs professionally for 60 years. This was the most impressive talk that I have heard in all those 60 years. This is gonna help a lot of people. So if you wanna learn, and it's not just for police canine, there's a lot of information here that goes beyond fentanyl overdoses. She talked about so many different things that dogs can get into that would hurt them and how to handle the dog, both medically or if you're a handler or a dog owner right on the spot, what you should and should not do. I really learned a lot. I mean an awful lot. So I'm gonna let this go. And the only thing I will say is, if you've been in the video business long enough, and I've only been in it for about 44 years, for Christ's sake, things can go wrong. The video content, I had the setting a little bit off, but the audio is perfect. You're gonna see a little bit of jerky movement when Lisa moves around, but her voice is perfect. This was so good. I'm gonna go back to Madison and refilm it, and at that point we'll update the video so it's perfect. So with this said, I'm gonna give you the web address at the end of the organization that Lisa and Lynn have founded, and it goes into a lot of detail on what they do for law enforcement or first responders. But this information is gonna help canine handlers all over the country, and I've never seen anything like it. So I'll step aside here and let Lisa have a go at it.
All right, so those that have taken our course before, this is actually a new presentation for Kevin, because Kevin requested this topic. So I put this together. The plan today is we're going to go through some lecture. I'm gonna do some demo on STIG. And then as part of training, we're gonna have you do all of the decontamination tricks that I show you on STIG. You're gonna do it on your dogs. So we'll just get started. Obviously, your canines are deployed in many different situations. Some of them may be new, some of them may not be new. And obviously, every time your dog is out, and even in your house that we'll see, sit down. Do you wanna just hold them during this?
Sure.
There is a potential risk for toxin exposure. And obviously, your dogs are at a greater risk than you because they're on all fours and noses to the ground. So a lot of things that might impact your eyes or that you might inhale, they're gonna get exposed to not only in higher concentrations, but first. So as I was thinking about this, this really is point of injury care. A lot of the things that we're gonna show you, you have to do before you transport to a veterinarian, because time really matters. Reaction time is really important. Some of the other things with toxins where we run into trouble with our dogs. So for example, if you take nerve agents in people, depending on the compound, can cause profuse sweating. Your dogs don't sweat. So if they were exposed to something, they're not going to show the same signs that you would normally see in a human. So some of the things they hide partly because of their physiology. And then sometimes we're not putting on a lot of personal protective equipment for our dogs. So if you're in a situation where you have to put on a gas mask and you have your dog, I'm going to tell you they're going to be exposed in a very similar fashion. If you have to cover your eyes for whatever reason, same thing for the dog, okay? So at the time of these incidents, you don't want to be trying the goggles on your dog for the first time. So if you ever think that you're going to be in these situations, we can get some of this equipment donated, mostly for practice purposes. So just let us know and we can help out with that. So like I said, reaction time is important. Please do not call us 3 hours after they ate something or the following day. Bob, one. we have a few others of you that call and they're like, he ate it yesterday. It's way beyond the time that we can do anything for your dog at that moment. And it actually may become really life-threatening. So if your dog does eat something, we need to know obviously their general weight. Most of these dogs weigh fairly similar weights. What they ate, if you have any kind of container or box with the active ingredient, it is very, very helpful. And how long ago did they eat it? Because some of the things we tell you to do, it depends on time, what we're gonna tell you to do. I talk with ASPCA a lot. There are so many things that these dogs can eat that we just don't know all the effects in these dogs. So a lot of you have this number on your card, the cards that you got from us. There's a sticker on the front of that on the envelope where the ASPCA number is there. They might give a discount to law enforcement dogs, but usually it's a $90 credit card fee. So that's the only thing with ASPCA, but this really is the only poison control center that I trust. There is a free one out there, and I have not been happy with that. They really don't give really good advice, so be careful of that. All right, so how to remove a toxin. There are lots of ways we can remove a toxin. Certainly we can flush their eyes. If it's an ocular toxin, we can do a full decon, and I'm gonna show you what that looks like. We can make them vomit. We can give them oxygen. And then a few of the other things, only two of the other things are done at the hospital. We might put them on IV fluids. We might have to pump their stomach. But the first four, you have to be able to do in the field with your dog. So we're gonna show you, as I kinda go along, I'm just gonna interject and use Stig. So we're gonna show an eye flush on Stig. Come here. Oh, please. Come here. Good boy. Okay, so flushing eyes is important. A lot of you may or may not have saline. Honestly, if you don't have saline and you have a bottle of water, that works fine as well. Water will not hurt their eyes. But when you are flushing their eyes, he knows what way to turn, so I don't do this to him. Okay, so this is a similar hold to when we give Narcan. Do you want to just hold his butt for a second? But holding their nose, if you have to do this in muzzle, you can do it in muzzle. I always brace my hand up here, because if he moves, I won't stab him in the eye with this. And you flush their eye. Good boy. You get a treat for that. Oh, that was good. Good boy. So when you practice on your dogs today, you don't have to shoot stuff in their eye. They might not be ready for that, but they have to be ready for this hold. And they have to be ready to see an object by their eye, okay? And then so that you can do this safely. Any questions on this? Okay. Just keep them up there. See what's next. He's like. All right, so wipe down decon. Lots of different ways we can decontaminate the dog. How many of you got, it actually looks like this. Did any of you get a glove to like decon with explosives? No one in here?
I'm guessing just Green Bay got it.
Oh, okay.
Bark and Blue did a thing, a fundraiser for some, but I'm guessing it was just for one con. We're working on it. We're really working this guy, Al. He's come to a couple of human conferences we've been asked to go to. So hopefully we can at least get prices down or write a grant or get some.
So this essentially, this is just a bigger version, is a charcoal mitt. And I'll explain a little bit of this later, but this is dry decon. Activated charcoal removes a lot of substances, explosives, drugs. It does bind fentanyl. All of the tests were done in humans. So this mitt is not really for dogs. However, the military has a very big decon kit that is very similar with an activated charcoal glove as well, and a lot of other things. This kit is $200. I was trying to see if we could get it donated for everybody, not realizing the price. These, I think, are like $30. So activated charcoal or dry decon, and we just don't know, does this work on the dog? We know activated charcoal on the fur does not harm the dog, okay? So when we do a full-out decon on the dog, let's say you're worried they have fentanyl on their fur, they have explosives on their fur, number one, get off their hardware. If they have a vest, everything will bind to that. So get off their normal hardware. It's always good to have a slip lead. I know they're hard to control on a slip lead, but get something else that you can wash afterwards. And then when you decon, he always faces this way. We should move this out.
He's looking at the one.
Oh, okay.
We're done for the next one.
Obviously, when you get close to your dog, if you don't decontaminate their head first, whatever they're exposed to, you're going to get exposed to. So we always start at the head, and it's really just like a good rub down. So you got to go down their back legs, feet, tail, and your dog should be used to this. Stomach, and then we got to do front legs. Down their front legs, feet, and same thing, okay? So we'll practice this today. That is a dry decon on your dog. If you don't have anything in your car, let's say you don't have this, what else can you just use to dry decon them? A towel, a rag, a sweatshirt. Just get something to wipe off the surface contaminants. Wet decon involves water and some kind of soap. Dawn dish soap works great. So why do you think we do high volume, low pressure water? Why not high pressure water? Right, that will go in your face. So high volume, low pressure, hose them down. If you have soap, keep soap in your car. Some of the other wipes are military wipes, and those are mostly used for nerve agents. And this is the decon kit. Any questions about that? Okay. Induction of vomiting. So getting stuff out of the stomach. We talk about all the ways to induce vomiting. Hydrogen peroxide, those of you who've heard me talk have heard me say that. And it has to be 3% hydrogen peroxide. If for some reason you don't have your eye drop, just know that if you give hydrogen peroxide, please, please, please double check the bottle that it says 3%. A lot of hairstylists use higher hydrogen peroxide, higher percentage. I've seen 10%, 13%, 40%. If you mistakenly give your dog 40% hydrogen peroxide, it is a dead dog. Hydrogen peroxide destroys tissue. It doesn't distinguish between bad tissue and healthy tissue. It will erode away the lining of the esophagus and the stomach. With 3% hydrogen peroxide, we see about 25% of dogs get bloody vomiting afterwards, and they need to be hospitalized until that heals. So that's the disadvantage of hydrogen peroxide. Years ago, we used the tablets, apomorphine tablets. Do some of you still have those? Or have all of you switched to the eye drop?
Some of them still have some in their kits because they got it from their veterinarian.
Yeah.
And I just tell them to hang on to it as a backup.
So the only difference between the tablets and then the Clever, which is the eye drop you all now have, is once they vomit, you have to flush the apomorphine tablets out of their eye. So you can put the tablet in, otherwise they are going to keep vomiting for a very long time. So you got to flush that. This you don't have to flush. It's already in liquid form, dissolves very rapidly. The nice thing about Clever is it lasts 3 years now, so you don't have to trade it out every year, which is a good thing. So when not to induce vomiting? Obviously, if they have ingested something and you're worried about it, inducing vomiting after 4 hours is pretty much a moot point. It's already been absorbed. Things are already moving through the stomach. The stomach empties pretty quickly. If they swallowed a sharp object, we don't want to induce vomiting with that. We've seen dogs swallow knives, spoons, skewer sticks. Skewer sticks are a big one that they'll swallow whole. So that's not a time we want to induce vomiting. I'm going to bring up a few others as we kind of go along here. Activated charcoal. Many of you, when you got your initial kit from Vestadog, there was a tube in there of activated charcoal. It's great in theory, but I would say the many, many toxins and things that your dogs eat do not bind to activated charcoal. So we kind of stopped talking about it and just told you to take it out of your kits because you really don't want to give activated charcoal unless it's a toxin that can actually bind it. Otherwise, we're just giving them a bunch of activated charcoal that's going to give them diarrhea, and it's not going to even work anyway. So that's when you have to either contact us if you even have activated charcoal. I'm not recommending that any of you get it, quite frankly, because there's very few toxins that it'll work with. And then inhalational therapy, so just getting your dogs used to an oxygen mask or at least seeing what this is. We train our teaching dogs with peanut butter or treats.
It'll fall out the bottom.
In the bottom of it just to get them used to it so they can see it. And this is something that's coming near their face, not for the very first time when they actually need oxygen. So we're going to practice with that today. And then obviously we can pump their stomachs at the hospital. We can give them fluids. This dog, if you look at its ginormous belly where the hand is, that dog was a food bloat, so ate an entire container worth of food. Did not get a twisted stomach, otherwise it would be in surgery. So when they're food bloats like this, we can pump their stomach if needed. All right, so now we're going to move into common things that either these dogs or even your house pets will get into. So this might be helpful for both. And we're going to kind of just run through this, and then we'll talk about times not to induce vomiting, and then we'll break you up, and you're going to practice all this on your dogs. All right, drugs. You know more than anybody, lots of drugs out there. Even though we might categorize something as a depressant, we know that it can have other effects, certainly when it's mixed with other drugs. And so that makes some of the signs confusing, especially in your dogs. I think the biggest problem we've seen, since many of your dogs are getting exposed to these drugs, is so are you. So if you have to treat your dog with Narcan, our kind of go-to in Wisconsin is you call EMS prior to treating your dog. The likelihood that you might need resuscitation is very high. More and more handlers have gone down across the United States this year than ever before, and that was because they treated their dog and then they were exposed. Why do you think that is? Those of you who know how to give Narcan, why do you think you're getting exposed? The dog what?
Sneezes.
Yeah. What else? Where do the drugs land on your dog? Number one, where is it going to go? Huh?
Fur.
It's on their fur. And you're down there giving them Narcan and treating them, you are going to get exposed. They did actually a really cool study at Penn Vet Working Dog Center. And handlers were exposed, I want to say 85% of the time, 80 to 85% of the time, when they were treating their dogs. It didn't matter if you were giving your dog an injection of naloxone or Narcan, or if you were doing the intranasal. You were exposed pretty much equally. So just remember, you're calling EMS for you. This video circulated a while ago, but I just want to reiterate that this is how fast and how easily it can happen. And this officer was just close to fentanyl, didn't even get it on him.
I'm San Diego County Sheriff Bill Gore. What you're about to see is traumatic body-worn camera footage involving one of our deputies who was exposed to fentanyl during his patrol shift.
You're okay. Sorry. Don't be sorry. Sorry. There's nothing to be sorry about. I got you, okay? I'm not gonna let you die. It's okay, just focus on your breathing, okay? Focus on it.
I need Narcan!
I'm Corporal Scott Crane from the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. My trainee was exposed to fentanyl and nearly died. It was our first radio call of the day, and this was Deputy Five Eyes' radio call. He found a white substance that he suspected was drugs.
It's a powder.
It could be cocaine or fentanyl.
It tested positive for fentanyl. That stuff's no joke, dude. It's super dangerous. I was like, hey, dude, too close. You can't get that close to it. A couple seconds later, he took some steps back and he collapsed. I ran over to him and I grabbed him and he was ODing. And I went to my trunk, grabbed the Narcan, came down to him, grabbed him, and I did one nasal spray in one nostril, opened the other one, another nasal spray in the other one.
I remember just not feeling right, and then I fall back, and I don't remember anything after that.
Just breathe, buddy, breathe.
Trying to get him to focus on just breathing, and because, you know, that fentanyl, you can't breathe.
It was in an instant. It's as though my lungs just locked up. I couldn't breathe. I was trying to gasp for breath, but I couldn't breathe at all.
Five, are you okay? Talk to me.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Don't be sorry. You're okay. Don't be sorry. There's nothing to be sorry about. I got you, okay? I'm not gonna let you die.
I need Narcan!
I got you.
I'm trying to not let him go. I wanted him to know he wasn't alone. It's an invisible killer. He would have died in that parking lot if he was alone. Fire department got there, put him on the gurney. His eyes rolled back in his head, and he started to OD again. And he was ODing the whole way to the hospital.
I don't think people realize the severity of just how deadly it really is. I'm Deputy David Five Eye, and I almost died of a fentanyl overdose.
One of the greatest threats we currently face is a synthetic opioid, fentanyl, which is 50 times more potent than heroin. Fentanyl overdoses are on the rise throughout our county. Every day, deputies recover fentanyl in our communities. And the county jails are not immune either to the dangers of this drug. Every week, sheriff's deputies intercept fentanyl entering our facilities. When inmates overdose on fentanyl smuggled into our jails, deputies and nurses are saving dozens of lives every month by administering naloxone, a medicine used to rapidly reverse the effects of the overdose. Fentanyl deaths in California have increased almost 46% in just the last year. Being exposed to just a few small grains of fentanyl could have deadly consequences. The dangers of fentanyl are real, and this drug is killing our communities. Please take the time to share this video. It might save the life of your son, daughter, friend, or a loved one.
So you get the point. Obviously, he lived.
I'm saying
so he even had gloves on. How do you think he was exposed? Huh? Aerosolized, so in nose, also eyes. So you can absorb it through your conjunctiva and your eyes. So that's another way for exposure as well. So either place, but happens that fast. All right, so let's go over opioid signs. What are signs in people? Drug overdose, what are the signs? What do their pupils do? Often pinpoint, yep. Then what?
Low respiratory rate.
And so usually you go into respiratory arrest and then cardiac arrest because they're not getting enough oxygen to their brain, their diaphragm's not moving. So same exact thing in your dogs. Same exact thing. Constricted pupils, they start to stagger a little bit. And their breathing gets really slow, and then they'll go into cardiac arrest. So it can happen fairly quickly. All of you now, I think, carry this Narcan, correct? And EMS, still some of them have this. Do any of you still have that? Okay, good. The reason we like the switch is the Narcan that you carry is a teeny tiny volume. It's a tenth of a cc. The other one is 2 mLs, so it's like this much. If you've ever given your dog anything in their nose, getting in 2 mLs of liquid is a no-go. It's not gonna happen. So, and they'll sneeze a number of it out. So this is just a really like a micro drop, and they will absorb it pretty quickly. Longer expiration, less cumbersome. I think we've told a lot of you, a great study done in dogs. They did a 19-year study. So 19-year-old Narcan was still very effective in the dog. So keep your old Narcan. Use your current unexpired Narcan first, but keep it in case you have to give multiple doses to your dog. Okay? Alaska, I don't know, Alaska's drug problem is pretty significant. However, they're using, the handlers up there all carry 8 mg Narcan. The one you carry is 4 mg. I think this is coming. I think the drugs are so potent. Can we overdose Narcan in our dog? No. No. So if you're not sure what they got into, but you know you just did a sniff, what are you going to do? Let's say you don't know. What if you think it's meth? Narcan. Give them Narcan anyway. Okay, why don't we bring him over and we'll just demo in him real quick. I know probably 99% of you, if you see your dog staggering and about to fall over, I know the majority of you are not gonna go and put on your gloves, but the appropriate thing to do is put on gloves. Keep a towel, same towel you wanna use for dry decon, it can be used for this, okay? I know, Baba. So, we're gonna put a towel over him, right? And then, here, Stiggy. Can you face so he faces forward?
Or just hold the back, how about
there? That sounds good. Okay, towel over, the same hold you did, but I oftentimes will rest my chin up here because if they move, you're not gonna be able to get this in their nose. And then we give Narcan. With your dog, just show them this or get them used to a towel over their head without biting it and then just tap it to their nose. Yeah, not a toy. And then typically after we give it, I slide the towel down and cover their nose. This was not a great demo, we can do it later. And then slide it over their nose, why? Sneezing, right? So they don't sneeze it out. Okay, questions on that? No questions? Okay. Have you guys all practiced this in your dogs already? No? Okay. Well, that's what we're doing today. All right, I think I'm done with him. All right, how many of you have heard of xylazine? Yeah? Yeah, so, and we've been talking about this now probably for about a year. I talked to one of my ER doctor friends, human ER doctor friend. She works up here in the area. And what they're seeing is a very large percentage of heroin overdoses or opioid overdoses are laced with xylazine. The problem in humans is the reversal for this drug is a veterinary-only drug. They don't have approval yet in human medicine to reverse xylazine. So they can't reverse some of these heroin addicts, partly because it's laced with this. Your dogs, however, we have the antidote. So if you're giving Narcan and they're not really coming around and you're on your way to a veterinarian, mention that it might be this other drug. Starts with a Z or an X. I say xylazine. Starts with an X, sounds like a Z. They call it the zombie drug. We have the reversal, okay? So that's just something to keep in mind if they're not improving with Narcan alone. We already talked about this. If it's mixed drugs, We're giving Narcan. So if they ingest a bag of meth, what are we going to do? What's that? All right.
What is a reversal for xylazine?
So we call it antacidin. It's atipamazole. So it's, if your dogs have been to the vet and they kind of like knock them out and they say we're giving them Dexmed, it's the same reversal for that drug.
Were you guys involved with all the ambulances in Brown County, bringing them, training them?
No. Oh.
Yeah.
We were?
Yeah, with Steve Strowman.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Do you know if their rigs carry that?
They don't.
They don't?
Mm-mm.
It's a veterinary drug only. It's not FDA, like, so an ambulance wouldn't have it.
Well, I know all the rigs are equipped to render aid to our canine partners right away. I don't know if they have that in there.
Oh, in their veterinary kit? Right. Yeah. That would be
a veterinarian purchase under the veterinarian license and one that would travel, like,
no, because it's not a controlled drug. So they can't buy it, but you'd have to have a veterinarian part of the MOU. You know, yeah, something to explore though. It's a great question. We haven't put it on any of the rigs, so I can certainly, we can look into the.
I think Gold Cross might be open to it. That's who donated us their ambulance, and they are always asking us for things, and we've done MOUs with them and stuff before, so
yeah, it's a great question. I'll check into it. As long as it's legal, I'll do it. Yeah. So, all right, stimulants and hallucinogens, they kind of all show the same thing. Amphetamines, LSD, ketamine, they'll show very similar things. in dogs, and I thought about this in people too, but in dogs, what they typically do is a very repetitive behavior. So I've seen a couple dogs, they literally just, they might not even look that goofy, but they're getting up on something and getting back down, getting up, getting down, getting up, getting up, and they don't stop for hours. This dog was turning its head, then circling, turning its head, circling. It's just these very repetitive behaviors when they are on meth. See him kind of, his head's back and forth, he's turning, he's sitting. Obviously you would know when your dog's not normal, but this is like a typical meth overdose. Sometimes they'll do it so much and so fast they overheat. Mm-hmm. So their body temperatures get really, really high, depending on how long they're doing it. So no antidote except you give Narcan and get to a veterinarian, and then we keep them in hospital. A lot of times we just sedate them until they ride it out. So yeah.
So any stimulant, just as it does in humans, increases the body temperature, it would in the canines as well.
Yeah, very much. Okay, so yeah, agitation, if it's not a mixed drug, they'll have very dilated pupils, rapid heart rates, really high blood pressures, lots of panting, and again, really high body temperatures. So we keep them sedated when they come in. Marijuana, I used to actually laugh about this drug. I mean, because we'd be like, oh, they got into pot, they're gonna be fine. It's not that way anymore. they get very depressed, they get very quiet. I mean, they literally look like a person who's stoned. So this is what this dog is doing. That usually happens a little while later. Some of their first signs, and then those that have seen this is the cat. He literally was like that for 72 hours. This was a long time ago, but we do have a certain IV medication that we can give them to metabolize their marijuana a lot quicker. So even medicine has advanced, so we can help them. But one of the hallmark signs, because most people come in and they're like, there is absolutely no way, none whatsoever, that they could have gotten into marijuana. We ask about teenagers in the house, we ask about friends who come over, but it's really not disputable when they come in like this. So this is how they start, and if you look up at that dog there, you'll see in a second there's urine all over the floor. They just start peeing everywhere, they just shower urine, And then after that happens, then they do this. And that's literally how they stay. So, for a little while.
Is this from eating some of the edibles now and some of the vape pens that are available out there in wax? Is that what they're eating?
Oh, they're eating bags of marijuana. They're eating gummies. So here's the bad thing about edibles and the gummies is they are laced with a sugar called xylitol. Xylitol is what's in chewing gum. It's fatal to dogs. Many of them go into liver failure. This handler, one of my colleagues, a veterinarian down in Alabama, actually took care of this dog, went to Alabama State. They did not have anything to induce vomiting in the field, but the handler knew something was up and got him to the veterinary clinic, and he did not live. He went into liver failure and died 3 days later. So that's the danger about the edibles and the gummies and all that stuff. There's it's just horribly sad, because when dogs get into them, it's a really bad thing.
And I would imagine the vape, since it starts as an oil, would be very
bad. And some of the oils are really bad too, highly concentrated. So it's no joke anymore. So if you're concerned that your dog got into this, if you think they ate something, have them vomit, and then get them to a veterinarian. So, yes. All right, questions on drugs. We're essentially gonna make them vomit, decon their fur, give Narcan. You're calling EMS before you do the last two, okay?
Is there a drug that counteracts methamphetamine exposure?
Mm-mm. No. I wish there was. There is a drug called cyproheptadine. It's essentially almost in the class of an antihistamine. We used to have, many, many years ago, have handlers carry that with them. The problem is when they're on meth, they're not going to eat. I mean, when they're just doing these repetitive behaviors, so it's very hard for you to administer. It's not an antidote per se, but it helps to limit some of the signs. So we typically give it when they come to us. But
some of you do have it. I have seen it in some of your kits. So
that's what that is for. We used to crush it up, and then all you'd have to do is dump water in it, suck it up in a syringe, and give it to them rectally. So I would have you do that if you're like, let's say it happens up here. And the referral center's closed. They're not taking patients, which is a very real thing. You've got a 2-hour transport, either to Waukesha, well, an hour and a half. You could maybe make it in an hour, fast as you drive. You know, so Waukesha or Madison is your next option. So, yeah, that's the bad thing about.
One thing we will say about the referral center, we worked really hard because there's a couple people like in this room who have tried to call there and to get in, and they're, you know, maybe it clearly wasn't an emergency, but you don't know that. So what I've talked to the administration and the previous medical director there to say is, if I have a handler that's calling here in Appleton area and says, I'm a canine handler, I must be triaged. You can at least go in there regardless of closure or not and have a doctor look at your dog. You still may be sent somewhere else, but that's on you to make sure you're telling them, I'm a handler and this needs to get in there.
UW-Madison has now started an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding. If that is set up by your department ahead of time, so it's not when you wheel in there at 2 a.m, if your administration calls UW-Madison and has an MOU, you will get 50% off of all services, which makes a really big difference, especially if you have a $5,000 to $7,000 bill, as some of you know. And
I'll go make some copies.
Okay. And they have a dedicated law enforcement line now. So I think it's 3. It'll say, if you are law enforcement and you have a canine, which means you take priority above anything else, and they will get you in, even if they are on a closure. So post-COVID, there is definitely possibilities that you won't get seen anywhere. There are times when Madison is on a closure, and so are 5 other referral hospitals. So we have to send owners to Minneapolis, and we have to send them to Chicago to get seen. It's been just a really sad game changer that's kind of in the veterinary world now. But if you announce who you are, Waukesha makes you a priority, UW-Madison makes you a priority, Fox Valley, depending on the doctor who's on, will make you a priority. Yeah, so. Okay, so some of the other things, I'm just gonna go over household foods really quick. It gets kind of boring if I just list stuff, but I think it's just stuff that you should be aware about. Grapes and raisins, highly, highly toxic. Don't feed grapes as treats. Years ago when we started discovering a lot of these dogs went into kidney failure, and we're talking kidney failure we can't reverse. They have just, in the past couple months, identified the toxin in grapes and raisins. It's cream of tartar. So if you also make something with cream of tartar at home, but it converts to tartaric acid, which is in the grape. That's the toxic component. So dogs don't metabolize it, humans do, and causes kidney failure for dogs. So that's, again, all of these, if you know they ate it, induce vomiting. That's where we're gonna start, and you're gonna minimize a lot of things that can happen. Chocolate toxicity, real thing. I'll go over that a little bit more. The life-threatening component of chocolate is it causes seizures and really high heart rates. They get arrhythmias and they can die. So we take chocolate pretty seriously, but there is a dose that I'll show you as well. Xylitol is the sweetener that's in a lot of things. If some of you feed peanut butter to your dogs, a lot of people have gotten on the, I want all natural, I want the foofy peanut butter. If you look at the back, many peanut butters out there have xylitol in it. Just feed Jif. Get something like, very simple, Jif peanut butter, good peanut butter. Some of the other fancier peanut butters, you're actually really doing harm by giving to your dog.
And if you see birch bark listed anywhere, that's a way that food companies can call xylitol something else. But that's also xylitol, so just be aware of that.
And then onions, leeks, all that kind of stuff, also toxic to your dog. It can actually destroy their red blood cells, so they get anemic within a few days. So induce vomiting as soon as you can, transport to a veterinarian. All right, here's the exception that we do not induce vomiting. Bob, would you like to explain?
Yeah, those
are my pictures. So we don't induce vomiting with yeast or bread dough. So anything that contains yeast, this was Bob's house from his dog. You called us a little bit later.
Yeah.
So what happens with yeast and bread dough is it rises in the stomach after time. So once it mixes with stomach acid, it'll rise in the stomach and it turns into this giant ball of dough. So if you wait too long, they need surgery. If you do it in a timely fashion, Bob got really lucky. There were two buckets of yeast and bread dough. That's what they got out of the stomach.
The yeast, Lisa, was in the other time this happened. This one.
Oh, this has happened to him twice.
This was the Costco stuff, did not have yeast.
Ah.
He ate 8 pounds of it, so.
Yeah.
She's only 38 pounds.
It did have a leveling agent in it. This was the Kirkland Bank brand. So I looked it up and sent it to your veterinarian before you even got there. So it isn't yeast and it's not activated live yeast, but if there was a leveling agent.
We just told you to stop making pancakes.
Yeah,
you
like
don't even eat carbs. Pizza dough balls had yeast in it. Clever, we were good. I'm glad I had you guys.
Anyway, if they have yeast or bread dough, just don't induce vomiting.
Pat was raising 12 cinnamon rolls. They weren't fully raised. Dog got in who made all 12, she ate all 12, but I induced vomiting immediately, and she puked.
That's what you're supposed to do. If you do it immediately, yes. Very good.
You see it, then you can do it.
Yeah.
We did not cook.
Oh, yeah.
You can just rinse them off 5 second rule.
Understand with chocolate, there's a type of chocolate. So obviously milk, well, white chocolate is the least toxic. It does not have the toxic component into it. So if they eat white chocolate, besides just getting some vomiting and diarrhea, they're gonna be fine. Milk chocolate, so they can essentially get an ounce per pound. So if you have a 70-pound dog and they eat 70 ounces of chocolate, I mean, that's getting a little bit close to the toxicity range, so I'd probably still have you induce vomiting because they're gonna just feel really, really sick if they eat 70 ounces of chocolate. But if you get sweet cocoa or dark chocolate, that's where it gets really bad because really they can only eat about an ounce per 10 pounds. So many times with the higher concentrated chocolates, we have you induce vomiting, okay? So it matters. It matters what they eat. A lot of times they'll just, especially Halloween and Easter are just a nightmare for chocolate toxicity. That's chocolate vomit.
That's Valentine's Day.
Oh, that was Valentine's.
Chocolate.
Yeah. We just see it. We see a lot of this. And so sometimes we worry more about the packaging than anything because it gets balled up in their stomach. This was a good little, this was a good gum. Toxicity. A lot of our gum xylitol dogs, they don't survive. So I was really surprised this little Pomeranian, it's the black Pomeranian in back. The owners were so excited. They sent us these pictures afterwards. His name was Frankie. He got into the owner's purse. She left the purse on the ground and the purse had gum. We'll see them get into it with kids' backpacks too, because sometimes kids will hide sweets. And if they're hiding sweets in their room, the dogs oftentimes find them. So this is where we get into trouble. So Frankie came in, had way over his little toxic dose of gum. He had really low blood sugar, his heart rate was super high, liver values were elevated, and a lot of times when they already have liver toxicity, that's where it becomes difficult. Are they gonna survive, are they not gonna survive? He spent a lot of days in the hospital and ended up going home. So Frankie lived. They were very, very happy, and he went home on Valentine's Day. That's right, I forgot about that. So yeah, so that's one of the good stories that we see, but the owners were really, really on it. All right, so that was a quick review of the most common toxic foods. Now we're gonna talk about rat poisons. So there's four big categories of rat poison. The phone call we get from a lot of owners is they ate something blue. They are all blue. Most of the rat poisons are blue. It helps us not at all trying to figure out what rat poison it is and what you should do with it. So as far as the categories go, the top one, which is called bromethalin, what happened a couple of years ago is the FDA said the most common one that we had was this anticoagulant one, where we can give them vitamin K. Said too many children are getting into rat poison, so we're gonna take it off the market or minimize it, and now we're gonna replace it with bromethalin. Well, that stinks because bromethalin does not have an antidote, whereas your anticoagulant one does. So bromethalin essentially causes the brain to melt. So once these dogs start seizuring, many of them don't survive, and we just try to support them through it and see if they live or if they don't live. So that's been kind of sad because the rat poisons are worse. With the anticoagulant ones, we induce vomiting, we put them on vitamin K, your dog does fine. And then the other one, zinc phosphide, is a mole bait, and I'll go over that one a little bit more. And then the last one causes kidney failure. So it's a rat poison that causes kidney failure. So why a lot of rat poisons work is rats, guinea pigs, rabbits, they don't vomit. They can't vomit. So they eat it, and then it just stays in their system and causes a lot of damage. So obviously, rapid induction of vomiting. This is a very repetitive thing. Induce vomiting, get to your veterinarian. The one caveat to this is the mole bait, and we made the mistake of this in one of our hospitals. When it mixes with stomach acid and we induce vomiting, it turns into phosphine gas. Phosphine gas is a riot agent, just in case you're wondering. Very toxic to humans. We induced vomit, one of the veterinarians on induced vomiting. They didn't know which one it was. And a number of employees became sick in our hospital because phosphine gas was emitting all over the hospital. And hazmat came in and shut us down for 24 hours until it was all cleared out. So you can induce vomiting, but do it outside where you're not being in a closed-in space. So that's kind of a bad one. Questions? This was one of the dogs that got into the one that causes neurologic signs. And again, usually once they're neurologic, we give owners a horrible prognosis. They wanted to keep going. So we had him sedated for a couple of days. He had gotten into the rat poison 2 days before he came in. And I thought for sure this dog was not gonna make it. But he did. I mean, he ended up making it and Zeb went home. So sometimes this was him running on the ice afterwards. So sometimes they survive even when we think they're not going to. But there's some bad stuff out there.
Do you see any long-term problems?
The ones that are neurologic, many of them will have some neurodeficits. Now these are dogs that don't have jobs. So if they're a little bit stumbly or they're blind in one eye, it doesn't matter for a house dog. It'll matter for your dogs. So.
And I think it's important to mention, because it's something I didn't think about till a few years ago, is even if your yard is fenced in or where you run your dog or your property or whatever, you know you're not putting any of this out, it doesn't mean that your neighbors aren't. So when your dogs are collecting baby bunnies in the spring and rabbits and everything, you know, it's worth asking if your neighbors are putting out poison for these rodents that are out there, because I mean, I don't know how many rabbits we catch a night. So thank God he doesn't eat them, but some of your dogs do.
Yeah. Household products, there are so many things. I just narrowed it down to kind of the most common. Antifreeze, big one. I'll go over that one a little bit more. The ice melts, silica packets, hand warmers. Now that it's becoming winter, we do see dogs eat hand warmers. Many of those aren't life-threatening, but they do cause pretty bad GI signs and wreak havoc on the stomach. So again, all of these you would want to induce vomiting, right? Pennies, if they were made after 1982, are zinc. Before that, they were copper. Now they're zinc. Zinc toxicity is a really big thing in dogs. So if they eat pennies, we try to induce vomiting. If not, a lot of those are taken out in the hospital by a scope before they have problems, and there's virtually like a day of downtime in your dog. So if you catch it or you're worried about it, you know, that's something that we can take care of pretty quickly if we can't get it back up.
Carpet too.
Huh?
Carpet.
Yes, carpet.
Diapers.
Carpet is another very, oh, Bob, yeah. I should have put those slides in as well.
You're saving
me a lot of money. Yeah. okay, here's where we don't induce vomiting. Two things, Gorilla Glue and batteries. This is what Gorilla Glue, look at this doctor's hands. It was a drop of Gorilla Glue. So the thing that Gorilla Glue does, even if they lick a little bit or eat a little bit, once it hits the stomach acid, it expands into this hard, essentially rock. And so unless you get it up like immediately, that is always a surgical problem. So Gorilla Glue dogs, we take really seriously, and they always have to go to surgery. Batteries, is Josh here? Did I see him? batteries, Josh did not call us before he induced vomiting. Thankfully, his dog was okay. His dog, not picking on him, but is on his seventh dose of Clever. Because his dog is, he's still ahead of you. Seventh dose, but his dog ate batteries and he induced vomiting. He got lucky. Alkaline batteries, especially if they're punctured, when they come back up, They will ulcerate the inside of the stomach and esophagus. Don't induce vomiting. You got to go to the hospital for battery ingestion. We'll take them out by scope, and that's or surgery, but that's probably the best thing to do for that. This dog down here in the lower corner, that was just the ulceration in his mouth from when he punctured the battery. Oh, Stig. All right. So yes, just a quick run through on those other medications. I really call this like the traveling in-law toxicity or the weekend visitor toxicity. People that come to your house especially if they don't have dogs, don't think about hiding their pills. They'll leave them out on the counter, they'll leave them out in the bathroom, and I would say the majority of our phone calls have to do with that. They got into someone else's pills. And these are no joke. I would say the ASPCA reported these were like the top four. Stimulants, for sure, a lot of people are on stimulants, especially kids for like ADHD or narcolepsy, you name it. So Adderall, Vyvanse, Ritalin causes what you can imagine. I mean, these dogs are crazy when they come in. Really high heart rates, high blood pressure. Antidepressants, non-steroidals, I would say the worst of them are ibuprofen or Aleve. Your dogs cannot get those. Your dogs can have Tylenol, but at a very, very low dose of Tylenol. They cannot have Aleve or ibuprofen. So at really high doses, we've had many dogs not survive as a result of that. And then Tylenol at higher doses. One Tylenol will kill a cat. So if you do have cats, most of you don't like cats, but. Yeah, so they can't metabolize Tylenol at all. So can be bad for our kids. And so what's the first thing you're gonna do if they eat a bottle of pills? Vomit. This is all stuff you can do at home. All right. Questions about that? I'm only gonna briefly talk about this before we do hands-on with the dogs. Obviously, if they're involved in, let's say, a building collapse, or you're near a riot with your canines, there are a lot of chemicals that obviously can be used in those situations, or chemicals that are now being emitted because a building collapsed. So we have to be concerned and thoughtful that, again, if you're being required to wear a respirator and goggles, this does not mean it's safe for your dog, okay? So obviously liquids pose a big hazard. I would say one of the more frequent things is antifreeze, especially in car fires. And if cars blow up, antifreeze is around. And we know that causes kidney failure to your dog. So we have to be conscious of that. So remember frequent water breaks, dilute. Induce vomiting if something is ingested. And if you are around that, make sure you are rinsing the paws. They naturally clean their feet. So if they are walking around a contaminated situation and you don't think about that or you don't decon their paws, they will eat it then when they're sitting in the back of the squad. Okay? So just getting used to decontaminating them. Some of the gases obviously can absorb into the lungs. So if they're in high heat, high smoke situations, or you're worried if someone's talking about hydrogen sulfide or other types of gases, you've got to get your dog on oxygen. So many of those gases will cause a constriction response in their lungs, almost like somebody having an asthma attack. So think of that. And we have to get them on oxygen if that's the case. And then you've got all the other things, metals, lumber, lead, arsenic, asbestos. I mean, just again, if you're worried about it for you, you have to be worried about your dog. And when we talked about the decon mitts, the military has done a number of studies about the dog skin and what works to decontaminate them. And those, a lot of them are still underway. But if you just remember dry decon and wet decon, okay? Minimal, do a dry decon on your dog if they're exposed to this stuff. There's stuff on the internet that says, well, my dog, doesn't matter if I get exposed to tear gas. You know, I got a mask on and my dog's immune to tear gas. Honestly, it's not true. So they do have another eyelid that comes up and might protect them a little bit, but they can absolutely show the effects from pepper spray and tear gas. So despite what you might have heard, that they're immune to it, that's generally not true. If they do get exposed, flush their eyes. Again, you're gonna have gone through flushing your dog's eyes. And if you think, get them on oxygen if they're having a hard time breathing or coughing. Okay?
Many of us have spent a very uncomfortable amount of time in chemical agents. Do you think that there should be after we get done working in that we should be spending time doing eye flushes, decontaminating them afterwards?
Your dogs?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's something we've totally ignored in the business, to be honest.
Yeah. And they are not immune. And again, just incorporating medical stuff, whether it's just spending a few minutes putting them in the position for Narcan, spending a few minutes and wiping down their fur, putting an eye flush near their eye, it's all repetition for them. You know that more than I do. I mean, but trying to do that on them, especially for us when they come to the hospital and they're like, what the hell is happening? It would just be better that your dogs are comfortable with all those things prior to it actually happening. So, and then your environmental stuff. I'm not gonna really go into this in detail, but you've got your spiders, has any of your dogs eaten a toad? Have you seen what happens with that? Depending on the toad and depending on the toxin, they foam at the mouth, they spit it out, they look like they're dying. We don't have the real toxic toads up here, but they don't enjoy that. Sticks, if your dog gets a stick penetration in the chest, in the eye, what don't you do? Don't pull it out. You looked back. Did someone have a stick dog? Yes. Yeah. Don't pull it out. And then plants. It's coming up to Christmas, so holly. And people talk about mistletoe, people talk about poinsettias. Those usually just cause vomiting and diarrhea. Holly is very toxic. Very, very toxic. Lilies, see a lot of lily toxicity. It seems to impact cats more than dogs, but lily toxicity and any of the bulbed plants. Bulbs are very bad, so any of the bulb plants. I'll just say two things here. Porcupines. I spent a summer working at Cornell University, and they've got a rash of porcupines out there. And we would keep numbers of how many porcupine dogs would come in. And I think the record that when I was out there was 11. So you think you might be able to pull all of these quills. One, if your dog lets you pull these quills, I think it's amazing. But secondly, there are quills where you can't see. So we sedate or anesthetize all these dogs. Many of them are in their mouth, all the way back in their mouth. And the bad thing about quills is if we miss one, so if one of them gets into the skin and migrates, they can cause a lung to rupture, they can cause a heart, they can migrate to the heart, so they migrate all over the body. So we try to do a really thorough job with getting rid of the quills. Just get them to a veterinarian for that. Don't try to extract them yourself. And we try to find any of them that might potentially migrate. This over here is a snake bite. Last year we saw 3 snake bites in Madison. Baraboo area, La Crosse area, we do have rattlesnakes. Your dogs are curious. So one of the things, the old things was put a tourniquet on them and suck the venom. Okay, this is wrong. I'm just saying it's still wrong. Just get them to a veterinarian. So we have the antidote. Sometimes we give it, sometimes we don't. It depends on how bad the dog is. When they come in, we have kind of a criteria if we're gonna give it, but most of them need to be hospitalized. They can't eat. They get extreme swelling. Sometimes their tissue dies. They're in the hospital for a long time, but you just have to get them as quick as you can to a veterinary clinic that can handle them. Do you, does Fox Valley have the antidote?
They have had it. I don't know, it's probably expensive.
We had it when I was there, but yeah. So we do see it, but it's not as common as it is down south and in Colorado, for sure.
Rattlesnakes are very common around that. And I've had differing opinions about the use of the rattlesnake vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that for a place that where rattlesnakes are common?
So we don't give it up here, but I do have a lot of colleagues that are in areas like yours. The vaccine, like any vaccine, is not 100% effective at mitigating the signs of a rattlesnake bite. However, if your dog can tolerate the vaccine and they're really highly, you're in an area like yours, it can minimize the signs and possibly minimize their time in hospital. So it's not going to prevent stuff from happening.
Does that work on the neurological part of the?
I don't know. Yeah.
Largely the vaccine has been used in horses and livestock that graze like that. And so some of those studies, they show it greatly reduces it, but I don't know if there's much on the canine.
There are some really good studies from down south on the vaccine. I don't know about the neurological signs though, partly because I don't give it. So that's a good question though. All right, just a tiny little quiz. When do you not induce vomiting? What toxins? Batteries. Yeast, if it's delayed. What else?
Glue,
Gorilla glue. Do not induce vomiting. And then at least inside, don't induce vomiting inside with your mole baits. Anything that says zinc phosphide on it. Do it outside if you're going to do that. Okay. What is the first thing you do if your dogs eat gum? Make them vomit. Yes, vomiting. If your canine starts to twitch, tremor with repetitive movements, what is the most likely drug he or she has been exposed to? Meth. Do you give Narcan?
Yes.
Yes. The reason we're still giving Narcan is you don't know it was straight meth. Right? So mixed drug. If there is an opioid mixed in with it, give Narcan. All right. Very simple. We've reviewed everything. And this is what we're going to do to your dogs. So eye flush, again, you don't have to actually squirt something in their eye. If you have to put them in muzzle to do it, put them in muzzle to do it. I don't want anybody getting bit. Narcan administration, dry decon your entire dog, including the paw pads, and then see how they adapt to an oxygen mask.